it often escapes people. Perfection, I think it's handy sometimes, especially when you read certain biblical passages, and when you read certain treatises on the spiritual life. When you come across the word perfection, I think sometimes it might be advisable to replace the word. And I'm not saying the word is objectionable; it's not. It's just I think sometimes it puts people off a little bit. I think sometimes if you replace it with the word either fulfillment or the word completion, mm-hmm. you'll perhaps make more sense of it.
In fact, Father Jacques Philippe, in his book on the Beatitudes, points out that we have to kind of reassess what our idea of perfection is, because perfection is not perfect comportment, which is sometimes the way we picture perfection, somebody who has, you know, no exterior flaws and they do everything precisely. That may be part of it sometimes, but that's not what we're talking about.
So this would be kind of a hyper-externalistic view of perfection.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody basically that can pose for a holy card,
mm-hmm.
instead of somebody who's interiorly well ordered.
Right. In fact, I had a priest tell me once that that living, you know, that what was it, Father Yureski used to say that it has to do with it's very hard to live with the saints. that the saints are human beings, and they're still in the process of being sanctified. And just mm-hmm. because they're perfect doesn't mean you're going to agree with them on everything. There was somebody who was telling me that, you know, just if you lived with Our Lady, you have this kind of imagination that you would, that everything would be perfect, and like, really, there would be no contradictions. You would have no, you know, let's make this a little more realistic. Where
mm-hmm.
anyway, we sort of sometimes romanticize the idea of perfection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the saints are always just sort of chanting hymns and not every once in a while chewing somebody out or doing something that we might seem, well, that, you know, oh, he ate, oh my goodness, that's not a thing a saint does.
Or it's just something that would rub you the wrong way, which maybe isn't the which is maybe a sign of the disorder you have, not them. But it's not you in general.
I know.
But it's not as if just everything would go along swimmingly. There's the famous argument between St. Augustine and St. Jerome.
Yeah.
St. Augustine calling, or St. Jerome calling St. Augustine the little Numidian ant.
Yes, yes. And I mean, St. Bernard persecuted St. One of the saints, one of the bishops of York, and I'm forgetting which bishop it is, but something of York. The name's escaping me. He was an English bishop. So the saints didn't always get along swimmingly well on earth. So
and that doesn't mean they weren't in the process of becoming perfect.
Yeah, that's something.
They weren't being fulfilled.
And that's something that that's been on my mind a lot lately, on a completely different matter, regarding the element of time in salvation. I'm thinking of writing something called something like Time, Salvation, and Eternity, or something like that. Frequently, when we talk about salvation and what's necessary for salvation, people get hung up on the fact that, well, you're saying people need X, Y, or Z in order to be saved, but what if people don't get it? Well, the idea is God has put us on this earth in a certain fixed period of time. We don't know what that period of time is.
Mm-hmm.
We were at a nuptial mass, a wedding, a few weeks ago, and there's a beautiful passage, the blessing at the beginning, where the priest says to the couple, "You don't know I'm slightly paraphrasing here, but it's basically, you don't know the future. These things are hidden from your eyes." And he's basically telling them, in the name of the church, you don't know what your life's going to be. You know, you're all giddy and happy now, but you know, life's going to have its crosses, it's going to have its sufferings, it's going to have its challenges. But he says, these things are hidden from your eyes. And it punched me in the nose when I heard it, because I was like, yeah, that's true of every state in life. You know, when I profess my vows, the priest could have said, you don't know what you're going to go through, brother. These things are hidden from your eyes. And indeed they were.
It's a good thing, too.
thank God, yeah. But the idea is that we don't know how much time we have on earth. We have a certain fixed amount, and we shouldn't... You know, the perverse human tendency is to be anxious, to say, well, wait a minute, you mean by the time somebody dies, he has to have done X, Y, or Z in order to be saved? Well, that seems mean because some people don't. Well, I mean, okay, God lays down the rules. God lays down, not the rules, but the requirements. He lays down, he says how it is going to be done. His grace does it. We have a minimal job of cooperating, a minimal obligation of cooperating. And all of this takes place in time. Mm-hmm. And none of us know how it's going to end. We don't know how it's going to end for ourselves, and we certainly don't know how it's going to end for those proverbial other people over whom we're fretting at this moment. You're listening to Reconquest on the Crusade Premium Channel. We're talking, I'm talking, this is Brother Andre interviewing Sister Maria Filomena, and we're talking about laying the foundations for the Seventh Beatitude. So I went on an excursus there that was perhaps a slight tangent. Let's go back to this Seventh Beatitude.
But, just to tie in what you were just saying, though, brother, that it's a reminder to pray for the grace of final perseverance. And praying for the grace of final perseverance and wanting to be open to God working in us, that was a key point that came out of that I wanted to make in the talk, that came out of the research that I had done, that you have that fundamental predisposition. You have to have goodwill. You have to want to let God work in your life. And then you don't have to fret about how much time you have or where you are in the spiritual life. Let God work.
And that might sound a bit, what's the word?
Not quietistic.
Quietistic. Thank you. But it's not quietism. I mean, quietism says that we do nothing in the spiritual life, that all we do is sort of silence the soul and we do nothing and simply allow God to work. And of course,
which has an element of truth to it.
Well, okay, so the church condemned quietism in both its full form and in a sort of semi-quietist version of it that was preached by Bishop Fenelon in France and Madame Guillon, if I'm remembering her name correctly. There was a Spanish quietist who was even more radical. But they basically set aside the necessity of the practice of the virtues, which, of course, that would lead to tremendous errors in the spiritual life, and the church condemned it, I think, for excellent reason. Actually, why don't we back up a little bit, talking about the biblical foundations, the Old Testament foundations for the Seventh Beatitude. You quoted Pope Benedict XVI from his book Jesus of Nazareth. Not something that's often quoted in any of our venues, either on this recording or on this show or in any talks in our conference. But he said some interesting things here about
In volume one, he has a passage. He has a section on the Beatitudes, which mm-hmm. was specifically why I had pulled it out.
So could you kind of point out some of the highlights of that passage and that you quoted?
Yeah. So in summary, Pope Benedict XVI was looking at the sort of historical, types for our Lord. And he'd been talking about how the concept in the Old Testament, the concept of the land, because some of the promises of the Beatitudes include the land. And you think, well, oh, there you go. They were referring to the state of Israel and we're going to get the land. And what the Pope was pointing out was how historically, this is in the Old Testament, before our Lord's coming, they had gone from the promised land, the land promised to Abraham, to a much broader concept of land, which was this the place of peace where God would reign. And so in talking about the earlier Beatitudes, he sort of set up this idea of the land growing to being a much broader concept and ultimately being the idea of heaven, uh-huh. but how it being a broader place wherever God's worship was properly ordered, that would be the promised land. And then when he gets to this beatitude, he makes the connection between King Solomon and our Lord. And he's quoting what God said to David, that he's talking to, God is talking to David, and he's talking to him about his son and saying that in his son's time, he would establish peace and that he would call him son, and he would be a son to him, and that God would be his father.